Yeah, I was going to say that, wasn't it?
Then he had some sort of inner cosmos.
Was that his?
Yeah.
That's right. I remember that.
Yes.
I was behind him when he bought Computer.com for $1 million off of Tiger Direct.
Really?
$1 million. Ridiculous.
Does he still have it?
I think so. He's got a ton of things. I don't know about Sid, maybe by face. But Donny, I see him, that he's at all the aftermarket things still. He runs Voodoo now. Voodoo.com.
Is Robert Hogarth in the room somewhere? Okay, everyone, we're starting back up. We're doing a bit on the Registrar Stakeholder Group bylaws. So Robert Hogarth from ICANN staff is here. Could we start the recording again, please? Okay, so I'm going to hand over now to Robert Hogarth from ICANN staff to walk us through a few options and things to do with the bylaws.
Sure, thanks, Michele. I thought this would be a helpful dialogue for us to have because you guys approached us several months ago to talk about the concept of adjusting your governing documents. And I thought it would be helpful to talk a little bit about what some of those options are, get a better sense as to where you are all in the process, and see if we can potentially collaborate on a good strategy moving forward that meets your needs. Essentially, it was only in September where the board approved a formal process for assessing, reviewing, and approving community charter documents. You guys have a relatively complicated system that you have inherited in that I think you've got three different governing documents that all focus on slightly different areas of your work. And so one of the useful things might be to talk through how you want to change those, what some of your goals and expectations are. You all did a very good job. I guess a small committee of folks got together to suggest a number of redline amendments to your existing bylaws. And what I wanted to explore with you is what might be the best approach for getting you to a conclusion. As I recall correctly, you've got a charter, bylaws, and procedural rules. And having them all touch on slightly different areas of your work, it might be advisable to look at taking that entire package and combining it into one sort of comprehensive set of documents or a particular document. I guess what I wanted to explore with you all in the public setting was, from an options perspective, how much support you wanted from the staff to provide to you all for doing that work. Essentially, there's two options as I see them. One is for you all to continue to work through your internal processes, do all the drafting work, and play back and forth with what you want to accomplish with some staff advice on the outside. And you maintain the control of that. Basically, you just take on more work and we do less. The other option is we do more work. We go back and work with you, find out specifically what you want. You've already given us a really good basis through the red line documentation that you provided. We come back with an analysis and with some recommendations for how you could package them all, consistent with the board new board review process and the rest. And then you still have control of the process, you just don't do as much work. So that's entirely up to you in terms of how you want to approach that. Couple of things to be aware of overall. As you know, there's pending a GNSO review, which will include not only the GNSO overall, but the individual stakeholder groups and constituencies. And so from a timing perspective, you all might want to consider, do we want to wait until that takes place? Do we want to continue the work that we're already doing? And therefore, when you meet with any independent reviewer, or whether there are discussions with the board, then you're already half prepared and ready to go. A component potentially of the GNSO review, for those of you who may have heard Ray Palczak's remarks, is the concept of a 360 review. So in that case, there may already be some expectations that the board may have of you that you've already started. So a combination or a number of different options that you all might want to consider. I wasn't going to go into anything really more than that until I heard more about what you all as a community were looking to accomplish.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Mr. Berryhill.
This whole issue kind of, I think, took a lot of us by surprise. Is one of the options to take our existing bylaws and mark them up in, you know, such a way to indicate what needs to be in there or what is no longer, you know, compliant or desirable, you know, as a baseline? Because I think in the amendments to our existing bylaws, there are specific goals that we're trying to accomplish, and one of our imperatives is we'd like to get this done as relatively quickly. So I think that it makes, at least to me, makes more sense to tell us to take our existing bylaws, mark those up, and then we can take the amendments that we've all discussed and debated on and graph them in, because I don't think the amendments that we have would implicate anything that you were concerned about. But my understanding right now is that our bylaws are not compliant as they are. Is that correct?
I think that's accurate in that the documentation you guys provided to us was built on, a 2003 document. And in terms of its layout, in terms of some of the terminology, it just doesn't reflect current reality. From a staff perspective, in terms of how we on the policy team interact with McKaylee, other members of the community, we don't have any other agenda than to see that you guys get this done as quickly as you want to get it done. Without duplicating work in the future, if in fact, you know, there are future changes that take place within the GNSO, you all are much more conscious and aware of what potential changes are coming down the road. I've been sitting in as an observer on the registry side as they discuss the evolution of ICANN and of the registries, and that's going to create changes that they may have in their community. You may have immediate specific things that you want to accomplish now, get them out of the way, and then talk about longer evolution and leave that for the years to come. I don't know. I can tell you that based on the process that the board created and approved back in September, it's about a 6-month process from the date of your formal submission of changes. So if you factor that in, I'm managing your expectation of quick. and just helping you appreciate sort of the timing and what you sort of lead into. But I wholeheartedly endorse the concept of at least bringing things up to the current state, if not the future state.
I think that's probably easier for us, given the discussions and compromises that went into our proposed amendments, that it would be hard for us if you took our currently amended proposal and then marked that up. There would be some concern about whether, you know, amendments that you were suggesting were solely for current compliance purposes or also related to changing the intent of what we're trying to change.
Yeah, there's no interest on our part in doing that. In fact, it seems like an awful lot of work has already been done. I mean, essentially all we would do is go in and say, oh, you know, this terminology is obsolete. Here are new things that you should add. The real issue becomes potentially format, depending upon how you, because the documentation of your governance is unique to your community. We don't expect it to be the same as the registries or the NCSG or the CSG. The critical thing is that you operate flexibly in the best way that your community can. There are certain templates that the board is used to seeing. There are certain formats that other communities have used that they have found to be easier to manage, easier to look things up, better to structure in terms of making sure that they've touched on everything. We have a lot of experience in that perspective and worked very closely with the non-contracted parties and with the registry stakeholder group in terms of pulling those into formats that we hope helped improve their processes and efforts. We're happy to make those suggestions. I'm also happy to hear you say, nope, not really interested. This is it. So it's entirely in your hands. My only goal is to minimize the administrative work on your part, to give you what sort of input that you can assess whether to take or not. And so one way going forward might be to take the red line documentation that you've already provided, just give us the chance to come back and say, here are 12 different things you might change. Here's an example of the document, and, you know, let you all react to that.
Tom, I don't see you heading toward a microphone. I think we really need to quit kicking this around and make a decision as to what's going to work, you know, most efficiently. And I think you're probably the best person to speak to that. But go ahead, James.
Well, just more of a question, really. You know, I think driving the time frame behind this, it's really a self-imposed deadline, if I remember correctly, because we were concerned that there were changes coming in the marketplace that we were not equipped to deal with our current bylaws. And so I guess my question does that change our thinking to how much or how little we engage ICANN staff resources in this? I mean, do we see that? Are our nightmares coming true and we need to actually have this ready as quickly as possible, in which case we need ICANN staff? Or do we have the time to be a little more thoughtful on this on our own? I don't know the answers. I'm asking those questions.
Yeah, if our nightmares start coming true, then it's going to be too late.
Yeah, okay. But the necessary predicates for those things to happen are in place now, right?
Oh, I'm potentially one of the nightmares, right? I made that clear at the outset of the process that however it ends up, and so, yeah. You know, in certain ways, I sort of recuse myself as an outside policy advisor to a registry, but not a, you know, registry employee or involved in the operational aspect of it. But I appreciate what we're trying to accomplish, and I think speed is important.
Okay. Well, I think that helps. That helps. If we're trying to get this done, you know, relatively quickly, I think then that helps make an informed decision.
No, this is McKinley speaking. Just with respect to this thing around, sorry, taking that thing out of my ear, around timelines and everything else. I mean, this has been going on for, I don't know, 2 years, 2.5 years. Now, that's nobody's fault. I think that's just been a case of you know, doing something like this is not something that generates revenue for anybody. It's something that several people volunteered and they helped to do this, and you know, trying to arrange even a conference call to get a bunch of people on the phone to even discuss some of the options was going to be a challenge, which is part of the reason why, rather than trying to, you know, force a square peg into a round hole, decided to see if Robert could come to us today. Personally, I'd love to just be able to put this to bed as quickly as possible. That doesn't mean doing it badly, but, you know, we can't keep dragging this out. We need to bring this to, you know, to close.
Tom Barrett, for the record. I think McKelly's right. I think that if we don't get this to a closure, then we're looking at another 2 to 3 years before we do. So I totally endorse that we should have an effort to look at what we've proposed to do, and let's figure out how we update that according to best practices and the latest agreements. But I don't think that should detour our approval, which the constituency has voted on and said we want these changes. We should finalize that and make those gospel. And then I would certainly would love to participate in figuring out how we fix not only the bylaws, but look at the rules and the charter and update all those three in tandem. But I don't think we should spend any more time or delay the implementation of the new bylaws that we've all voted on.
Can you guys clarify for me status where it is now? For example, you shared with us a document that was redlined. Have you voted on that? And that's, you said, we are done, let's go forward.
Yeah, we thought we were done, period.
We thought that we'd just we're handing that over to yourselves just to make sure that we weren't breaking some, you know, in ICANN internal bylaw that we weren't aware of. And then you came back to us and was like,
we weren't
quite expecting that.
It's been voted on.
If you're done, then what I would propose is, I don't know the next time you guys get back together, but in the matter of 2 weeks or something, I can generate a document that has it in the right format, cleans up any of, because there's a number of things in there where the terminology is just not consistent with where we are today, and we start the clock ticking. In other words, send it back to you. You guys say, hey, okay, it looks good, or no, fix this or that. And we just move forward. I mean, I think that would start the formal clock, and you'd have a board, you know, you'd potentially have the board looking at it by London, if not before.
Right. Just so you know, even the definitions that we have now included in the bylaws document were discussed and debated, agreed upon, and voted on. So to change the terminology is you're now changing some definitions, and that may or may not be, you know, that may not simply be an administrative change for us.
And we'd only look at administrative stuff. I'm not looking to change anything that you guys are doing, but, you know, the headings, I think there's some references to other ICANN structures that don't exist anymore, things like that can be cleaned up. Because again, whatever ends up being handed to the board, we want it to be smooth. We don't want it to get 3 months down in the process and then a member of the board says, well, this doesn't exist anymore. Let's send it back and get it amended. I'd rather handle that at the front end so that there are no difficulties at the back end. There's another piece to this that I'm being recorded, it doesn't matter, where I think there's differences of opinion between staff and some members of the community in terms of what happens after you have made a decision. You guys have made a decision, correct? And so in the minds of some, that means that you shouldn't be operating under or changing your processes or procedures based on those changes until you get a formal stamp of approval. There's another school of thought that says you've made the changes, you should conduct your affairs in that way, with the comfort or potential discomfort that 4 months from now the board says that's not kosher. So I think it's a matter of your own operating processes and the approaches that you want to take in terms of a comfort level with the degree of changes, because I haven't looked at them from a substantive standpoint. I mean, if you suddenly changed eligibility for American plumbers to become members of your organization, and the board had a problem with that, and you had already accepted 10,000 plumbers into your membership, that might be a substantial problem.
Right. So as far as I think we're concerned, we have put ICANN staff on notice that we have approved these changes to our bylaws. If they have sat on them for 6 months and now want to raise some issues, that would, I think, be problematic. So there must be a timeline in which, if you feel like there is an additional review process or public comment process, then you know, I think we're owed that information sooner rather than later.
Yeah, there always will be a public comment process as a part of this process. The only exception I'd take, and we can battle it out if it's necessary, is it wasn't clear that this was the formal submission. And so, you know, I'm now understanding, and we've made it clear today, that this is what we're prepared to do going forward. What we've discussed is, and I think helps you out in the long run, is to make sure that there aren't any pieces in there that would delay the process going forward.
So, Tom, if you remember, we did have some discussion about the two options that that Robert and his team had put to us. And from my position as chair, if I get a clear message from, you know, the majority of people who respond on the mailing list about a particular thing to go one route, then I'll go, okay, fine. I've got a mandate to go back to staff and say, yes, this is exactly what we want to do. But I couldn't make that assessment because I saw probably as many of you being supportive of staff cleaning up the document and just writing it up in a way that was reflective of what we'd agreed on. But I saw other people seeing this as being a kind of potential for, I don't know, staff interference or whatever way you wish to frame that.
And, so, I think part of the reason why you didn't get a clear consensus is that there's a lack of clarity on what the next steps are to put these into place. So we still don't have that, I think, from ICANN about, does this require board approval? You know, is there a public comment period? What's the process for that? That clarity, I don't think, exists as of today.
I'm more than happy to send you a link to the process that's on the GNSO Council, on the gnso.icann.org website that does outline the process. And there is a public comment period as a part of that so that the rest of the community can, or for members of your own community to comment, or for you guys to say, this is why we should do it and this is why it's a good thing.
I'm sorry, this is Jennifer Staniford for the Transcript. Does it go to the board before it goes to public comment? I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the process. In order for us to determine what our next steps would be as a group.
You guys are only the second ones who are actually going to use this process. So there's a phase one, which is the amendment preparation, which you are now at the end of. There is a phase two staff review. And I'm comfortable, by the way, depending upon your guys' perspective, if you all to say right now, well, does this start the staff review process? Because then I've got 10 days to come back and comment on any of the various pieces of it. Now, the issue there in terms of staff review, and let me read it to you, is upon formal receipt of the proposed amendments approved by the community group, ICANN staff, and that's us on the policy team, will analyze the proposal and within 10 business days submit the community proposal with a report to the appropriate board committee identifying any fiscal or liability concerns. So we're not looking at anything from a perspective of how you're operating or anything else unless potentially it creates a financial or liability concern for ICANN, the organization. What I want to prevent is if, in particular, in its current form, if it's not correctly describing the structures and other pieces, I don't want to pass that on to the board because I'm going to have to say, sorry, it's not sufficient, it's not appropriate. So I think through this short couple of week process, if I can get back to you the cleanup of the document, then, and I don't know how you guys work internally, your executive committee or whatever can come back and say, yep, great, no substantive changes. Then we can say it's formal. Literally what we then do from a notice perspective is alert the Structural Improvements Committee of the board that the amendments have been submitted, just as a heads up to them more than anything else. Then, to your point, come the public comment period. And that's a 30-day public comment period. I'll read it to you. After board committee review of the staff report and the proposed charter amendments, the board committee will direct the opening of a public comment forum. And upon completion of that forum, within 30 days, we have to provide a summary and advise the board what happens. So there are some built-in potential time lapses here. One is, you know, within 10 days, we'll submit a report to the SIC of the board, depending upon when they meet next, which will be sometime, I'm sure, between now and London. They'd authorize the initiation of a public comment period. Then we'd see what comes in. I would hope that you as a community or members of your community would comment in support of that. And then, and I'm not going to read you the three paragraphs subsequent to that, but once the public comment period is completed, the board then has a review opportunity. And there are certain timelines here to make sure that the board acts. And, I mean, they'd be inclined to act, but based on other situations, timing or elsewise, they have to act within a certain period of time. They can't just sit on the shelf.
Thank you for that explanation. So I believe that, first of all, we'd like to say that we've submitted them formally, and if we could start the 10-day clock in order to make some progress here. And then, in turn, you could provide us with a red line of the changes proposed, and we will then circulate them to the stakeholder group.
You know, I like that idea, because what that would allow us to do is give you feedback. Still within 10 days, we would submit a note to the SIC. What we're likely to say in that, and right now I'm just thinking out loud, is that we've reviewed it, we've noticed a number of non-substantive process issue, not process, but just terminology issues that we're working with the community to fix. In the meantime, SIC, you're now on notice that this has been done. And pending our look at it, I don't suspect that there will be, but we'll have to look about any fiscal or liability concerns. And then we can actually have almost a dual approach so that we're not losing time. And by the time the SIC meets, you have come back to us, say, oh, that looks good, that looks, or that doesn't. Now, the only pressure that puts on you all is relatively quick return to anything that we send to you. Only because, and what I hope, again, is with our clear red or yellow or green lines, you'll see where we've suggested changes that you'd be in a position to say, okay, fairly quickly, ooh, no, we're not going to change that, or okay, that looks fine. So that's just a process piece on your all's side in terms of quickly turning that around. Okay.
That's very helpful, thank you. Is there anybody else here in the room or remotely who has any comments or queries? Rob Golding is happy, is he? He's in a happy place. This is a first, we'll put it on the record. Mr. Golding is happy. Any other registrars in the room have any comments on this? Or if not, we will assume that you're happy with us proceeding with this. Yes?
Sorry. Yeah, we take that back. Rob Golding now
You're taking
has,
it back.
He has a question.
So you're now declaring Rob Golding to be unhappy.
He's concerned. His question is, I'm concerned about this idea that there is a public comment process on an optional group that is self-funded, deciding on its own internal structures and rules relating to its own membership as one of many stakeholders. Since when do non-members get a say about something they're not part of?
Since the board said so. I mean, it's a process. The stakeholder groups, constituencies of the GNSO, Their charters are approved by the board of directors, and any changes made to those charters are expected to be reviewed by that body.
I suppose, Rob, I think I understand where Rob Golding is coming from, in that, you know, what's the kind of boundary, the purpose, the function of the public comment thing? I mean, I think that's what he's trying to understand. I mean, if for example, since you like seem to have a fixation with plumbers, I'll use that. If a group of plumbers were to object to some terminology in our proposed bylaws, you know, what grounds would that objection have to have in order for the board to direct you, to direct us to, you know, reverse a change or whatever?
I think that becomes a matter of judgment for the board. Just as any comments that come into ICANN, they'd be considered for their relevancy, the context in which they come from. I think the background, or at least if I can share sort of the perspective that I perceive from the board members, is that whenever there's a decision that they need to make, they want to have the opportunity to hear from the community. Some of the context of this is not directly related to your stakeholder group, but impacted some of the non-contracted parties, and that was simply that in their case, there were potentially fundamental changes that were being made that weren't consistent with ICANN's general strategic direction. And giving different groups the opportunity to comment on that is just a part, I think, of the board's general approach to making decisions. The remote commenter, if that helps or if there's a follow-up comment.
So, Mr. Golding, speaking to you remotely, does that satisfy your query, or do you still have other concerns?
This is kind of neat. We have an ongoing dialogue, and Amy just channels him. That's good.
He says it's okay for now.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. I think we'll follow up. So Jennifer and I will follow up with you afterwards.
Great. We'll have an email and a document for you all to look at and week and a half.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. So I believe we have Deloitte here somewhere that are going to talk to us about the wonderfully exciting world of IP internet services and strategy.
Hi, this is Jan Korstens. I don't know who came up with that title.
I don't know. I'm just looking at it, just going, I have no idea what that means, but okay.
You could expect that I'm here to talk about the Trademark Clearinghouse and give you an update.
Well, you know how much I love talking about the Trademark Clearinghouse.
I know.
With you.
It's
one of my
topic,
favorite subjects.
Every drink, I know.
Are you going to come up and join us here, or do you want to exercise your legs? There's only one Deloitte employee. There's a whole. Oh, I've been informed. There's a gaggle of Deloitte employees hiding down the back of the room.
So we wanted, as I mentioned, to give a small update on the status of the Trademark Clearinghouse. I know you have a busy schedule today, so we'll try to limit our time. Take a maximum of 50 minutes, of which half potentially could be used for an update and half for answering questions, if there are any. It's the first ICANN meeting that we don't have a Trademark Clearinghouse session as such. So we focused during the session on having a lot of one-to-one meetings with registrars, with our agents, with registries. And we thought that for some of the stakeholder groups like yourselves, it could be useful that we would visit you so that you could interact directly with us. We're now live since a year. It's going quite okay. We expect to surpass the 30,000 trademarks within the next 2 weeks. So that means that we're also seeing still an uptake on a daily basis. We have over 40,000 labels within the trademark clearinghouse, labels that are all eligible for a domain name. So that's a good number, I think. We don't see yet a lot of uptake for actual domain name registrations during Sunrise. I think everybody is aware of that. We, however, see a lot of activity on the claim side, and we see a lot of activity on the CNIS request, so the notifications that are sent out prior to the potential registration of a domain name is at this moment over 500,000. And we also see that a lot of them are not followed by an actual registration, so it does work as a repellent. We've also notified you of the fact that we're going to have ongoing notifications. So the half of the claims activity after 3 months will be extended with a notification to the trademark holder or their agents whenever there is an actual registration of a domain name that has an exact match with a record that is in the clearinghouse. As a registrar, you're not expected to do anything specifically. Obviously, if you're a registrar and also an agent, then you will get those in. But as a registrar, as such, you're not expected to do anything. And then the last point that we wanted to raise, we're trying to. I mean, we're working a lot now with our agents on helping them as much as we can. Also, working a lot with all of the registries. One of the things that we're trying out is to see if new ideas could help them in having better results. And what we've noticed or what we heard in the market was that for a lot of trademark holders, the concept of having to go first to the trademark clearinghouse, then receive a code, then going for an actual registration, is still somehow confusing. So we thought that for certain designated TLDs, it could potentially be interesting that clients could go to registrars or to agents and actually apply for a domain name and a trademark clearinghouse validation at the same time. How would that go? Well, they would potentially on their website set up something where it became clear that when they apply for a domain name during Sunrise and they provide the right information, that they will have the validation of their trademark plus the actual registration of a domain name. It will make it easier and will make less of an abstraction of what we have to do. We tested that out with a couple of registrars and they were actually positive about it. So if you have questions about it, please feel free to visit us this week so we can give you some more detailed information on how we would how that could be set up and how that could help you become successful. Well, that's it, actually. Those are the points that we wanted to raise at this moment. Again, we're here. We have still some slots available for meetings. If you're feeling like having a more detailed session, please feel free to contact us, and then we'll be happy to provide you with any type of help of information that we can provide. Any questions, any remarks, any feedback you want to give us on how we're doing, things that should be different, things that we need to pay attention to, please feel free.
This is Michele. Just one obvious question. What's the turnaround now on validating a mark?
I think the majority, as Vicky is showing me, two days at this moment.
So in 48 hours. So Vicky is in the room but has been hiding down the back.
She can
I wonder
join me
why.
Here.
Deloitte people don't seem to want to come and sit with the registrars.
Yeah, I have a question relating to the trademark clearinghouse procedures, and I noticed that there's a third party. Oh, okay.
I nodded at you, John, because you made it. I don't know. Anyway, never mind. Just let her answer the question, the first question she was asked. Then Mr. Serlin, who is adjusting the microphone to compensate for the air conditioning. And then we'll have Mr. Berryhill.
Thank you. question for the verification? Or,
the question I asked was, what was the turnaround on?
So if all the information is correct at the first time, it's maximum 2 days at this moment is a turnaround. So 48 hours.
Is that 48 hours, 48 hours, or 2 working days?
2 working days, because we actually work.
Do you work 7 days a week or five work days a week?
6 days a week.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Mr. Serlin.
Yeah, hi. Matt Serlin, Mark Monitor. So now I have 2 questions. So, Jan, I'm sorry, you said the ability for someone to register a domain name and the Trademark Clearinghouse together, both through an agent and a registrar. How exactly would that work if they're doing it through an agent? I understand how it would work through a registrar. If they're, you know, if they're a clearinghouse agent and an accredited registrar, I think that's interesting. But the fact that you could go to an agent and do that is troubling.
Well, no, perhaps I said it wrongly. I mean, we meant registrars.
Okay.
The only thing, of course, is that if the registrar is not an agent, he would also have to work with an agent.
Right, yeah. Okay. And then my follow-up to that is, when Vicky said 2 days to validate a mark, how would that process work? So it wouldn't be in real time, right? Where at Sunrise registration, client goes in, requests the name, pushes out to the registry. There'd really be a 2-day gap in that, correct? Okay, cool, thanks.
We do, however, I mean, we're currently working with a few teams over the globe, so we're pretty much covering, I think, at this moment, 19, 20 hours of the 24 hours a day that people are actually validating. And so, yeah, it's 48 hours, 2 days, right, however you want to look at it.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Berryhill.
Yeah, in the Trademark Clearinghouse, I notice there's a third-party dispute procedure where a Trademark Clearinghouse entry can be challenged for a $250 fee, which is assessed only if the complaint is not upheld. Can you give me some idea how specifically that works? Do you have to pay the fee up front and then get a refund, or is the fee charged after a decision is rendered?
So in principle, how we work, but we haven't had one dispute.
You're going to, I want to find out.
So the disputes have to be done I believe, 7 days. We have to provide a response, and that's actually just the days that you can reserve an amount on a credit card. So you don't get charged if it's wrong from the clearinghouse, so it just falls, and otherwise your amount, your credit card will be credited.
Okay, all right. So, because, I mean, there's some ridiculous crap in the Trademark Clearinghouse. The word Tahiti. I mean, what's remarkable is with all of the discussion we had in TLDs over reservation of geographic names. Okay, the name the Tahiti is an entry in the Trademark Clearinghouse that's owned by a company that does nothing other than sell trips to Tahiti, regardless of the fact that they obtained a token French registration for vague computer services. I can't imagine what their specimen of use would be, because that's all they do is sell trips to Tahiti. The German name, and I can't pronounce this right, the city of Munich, München, however that's pronounced in German, I know I'll slaughter it.
You're getting a thumbs up from Volker over here. So.
Is that close enough? Oh, okay, that is a trademark of a company that is a web portal that does nothing other than provide resources, informational resources, third party, not official, for the city of Munich. And it blows my mind that while, you know, TLD operators like Dot Berlin and so forth, or Dot New York City, have to get the approval of local authorities, you are just handing out the names of geographic entities and cities on the basis of nothing whatsoever, other than the word München, with a clip art picture of a city skyline next to it, and that fit your dominant characteristic criterion in the way that you slipped figurative names in without any or figurative marks in without any public comment or process. The domains, and this is great for registrars. You should know this. The word domains is in the Trademark Clearinghouse
And the entry is owned by a Czech domain registrar. It's for a Czech trademark that's a joke for training services for adults and children. And all they do is sell domains. They're a domain registrar. It's complete bullshit. The word hosting, believe it or not, is a trademark of a Dutch hosting company that these wonderful verification agents, you know, could not figure out that the a trademark registrant of a Benelux trademark whose name is Hosting BV, who only does hosting, has a trademark in hosting, and they can roll that up in every TLD. You know, it's up to you to spin the wheel to pay $250 to deal with this kind of garbage that's going into the trademark clearinghouse with no quality control whatsoever.
Would you care to respond?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of generic terms yes. which are owned by respectable companies, Apple as an example.
Those are arbitrary marks. When Apple is not a computer. Apple, you know, Apple is an Apple, and Apple computer does not make apples. When a hosting company comes to you with a bullshit 24-hour Benelux trademark in front of your face for the word hosting, you would think that it would get some sort of critical analysis. When a domain registrar comes to you with a bullshit trademark for the word domains, you would think that it would get some kind of substantive look, other than the fact that, I mean, these are domains that are being registered, and through the Trademark Clearinghouse, they can get a global first dibs monopoly on the words domains. It's obscene.
Well, I don't think it was us as the Trademark Clearinghouse who defined the matching rules or the validation rules as such. I mean, we are validating in a very consistent way, and in a very accurate way. If there are other variations required, I mean, I guess you were part of the community at the time when those rules were decided.
There was no community discussion on slipping in figurative ones at the last minute so that people could get generic words and figurative marks and jurisdictions that would have tossed them out on their ear. There was no community discussion on that point.
Well, I can tell you that we didn't decide it upon it either. I mean, you know, I think you're shooting the messenger with this message.
And if I can just add, it's not because that they're in the clearinghouse that they are actually Sunrise eligible. We have trademarks in the clearinghouse that are Sunrise eligible, providing sample and proof of use. And then you have other trademarks that they indeed provided proof of use. The proof of use was not sufficient, but they're still in the trademark clearinghouse and they get trademark notifications. So not all trademarks are Sunrise eligible and are able to register during Sunrise.
Okay, well, the Tahiti guy is rolling them up.
Mr. Bladel.
I had a bunch of questions, but I just hate following John. I think we said it in Los Angeles, you know, is that, you know, after we're all dead and gone and people have forgotten about ICANN and this entire industry, this trademark clearinghouse will live on. I do believe that. And the one authority in the room is shaking his head or nodding his head on this one, because it's very scary, I think, what we're trying to do here. So I just have some basic statistical questions. I did come in a little late, so if you covered these or it's a repeat, I apologize. I'm wondering the total size of the database now at this point. Is it still growing? Is that growth accelerating? I mean, what are you seeing on that? Are you seeing, and I wanted to get your thoughts on the plus 50. Where did we end up with the plus 50, and is that being implemented? And what standards are you using to determine the plus 50 generic terms? And I also had a question about the onboarding of additional, because wasn't the idea that IBM would manage the database, or Deloitte, or somebody, and Deloitte was the verification, but there would be other subsequent validators coming down the pipeline, and where are we with those, or are you still the only game in town? So just some quick-fire questions. I'd love to get some response. Thanks.
And also, just because we're going to the board straight after this, James, and then Volker's after you, and that's it. I have to close the queue.
I gave some of those numbers already at the beginning. So 28,000 is where we are.
Is that still growing? Or?
So every day we are getting in 100 to 150. And That's now stable for a while. So it's not like we are currently seeing peaks, but we are seeing continuous take-up. That is both from existing agents, and we hear from those that they still are able to reach other clients, that they haven't been able to convince their whole client database yet, but that gradually that's where they believe they will get. And then we are also getting in new agents, and in some cases also from new regions like the Middle East and the Asian region. So it's growing still. As I mentioned, those 28,000 represent somewhere in the 40,000 labels that are eligible for Sunrise. If you remember, some of the special characters were either omitted in trademarks or replaced by, in a label that would be Sunrise eligible. So that's where I think the 28,000 will be some over 40,000. I don't have the exact number there. However, the 50 plus, the UDRP, historical UDRP cases or court cases, that also could generate labels that were not Sunrise eligible, but eligible for claim services. There, the number is much lower. So despite the fact that the community was very loud about the requirement of having that and the effort that we had to do to set this up, at this moment, we don't see a lot of take-up of that.
That's encouraging. I mean, the barn door is still open. The fact that the horses haven't run away yet isn't really all that comforting, but I guess it is still a concern. Thanks.
Mr. Grimon.
Yes, I was thinking that I would have to adjust this from fund size, but you kind of already... You kind of already answered my question, as is, are you happy with the uptake so far? Is that something that you have expected in this size order, or did you expect much, much more? Because on the registrar side and the registry side, there were significant implementation costs, and now that we see just, well, in our view, a bit of a disappointing take-up, was it worth it? But that's probably not the question to ask you, so I'm just asking you, what is this take-up compared to what you expected before? Disappointing? Norm? More than you expected?
Well, I mean, we speculate a lot about that too, just as you all are probably about the uptake on the new GTLD program as such. If it continues like this, I think eventually we'll get to a respectable database. And the question is always, okay, when is it a big enough database to be a good database? Honestly, I don't know. Is it 70,000? Is it 100,000? Is it 200,000? No clue. The question I think that we need to go to eventually is, I mean, you know that the purpose of the Trademark Clearinghouse is twofold. On the one hand, it has an opportunity site where you can get priority and register before anyone else. That's still not very successful. Perhaps it becomes successful if people start realizing the new GTLD program better, if there are more TLDs with good opportunities. I think the couple of big city TLDs that are coming our way might be good ones. You could say, okay, what is the success rate there? I mean, to be honest, if you have 5% registrations of even the current population, you would have 1,500 registrations during your Sunrise. But most Sunrises haven't even seen that. So hopefully that will change. But I think it's awareness that is the requirement there. I think on the claim side and on the effect of that, there I do think that it has a good result already. I mean, if you see the number of CNIS requests that we have, the outcome of it, and we're launching a press release about that. So I think that's successful, that works. And so, yeah, if it continues growing, if more IDN-type trademarks are getting in, then I think it will be successful within this and half a year to a year.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Stop this session is now concluded. If you could stop the recording. Registrars.